before 8 a.m. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. I'm Peter Apathy, and this is Raven News. The Sitka School District's transition to the new Common Core math curriculum has fallen behind schedule. Despite an intensive planning schedule in all buildings, program facilitator Lyle Sparrowgrove told the school board Tuesday night that students won't see new classroom materials until next fall. And just a few months later, in the spring of 2015, the state will test all students on the new curriculum. Sparrowgrove said that the faculty and parents serving on the instructional committees in each building were doing, quote, yeoman's work, reviewing proposed materials, and they were starting from scratch.
Just so you know, there is no blueprint for this entire process. There's nowhere to find an outline or a guide. So going in the dark would probably be the adequate way to say this.
The Sitka School Board adopted the Common Core standards in 2012. The standards have been adopted now in all school districts in 45 states. The standards were developed after the National Governors Association pushed for a more coherent set of standards for K through 12 students across the nations. Sparrowgrove said that faculty committees in each building were focusing both on the classroom implementation of the standards and ensuring that the transition between grades and buildings would go smoothly for students. The term for training teachers in new methods and materials is called professional development. Sparrowgrove said this was a huge component of the transition to Common Core.
Professional development has never been more important at any other time in the few years I've been an educator than right now. The standards are more focused, more rigorous. I don't think there are any, I think most of the staff in this district are already working in them. They're doing pieces and parts. So it's not like they have to learn something totally brand new. They're already doing cool stuff and neat stuff with it.
School board member Tim Fulton asked about the impact of Common Core on Sitka's homeschool program called REACH. He wondered if parents who are concerned about the new standards could move their kids into homeschool and circumvent the transition. Sparrowgrove responded that the homeschool program would transition at the same time as the rest of the district, and its students would be assessed in May of 2015.
We're not sure what it all means yet. They're going to need all their materials to match the Common Core also.
Compared with other school districts nationwide, Sparrowgrove felt Sitka was in a good position, not as far along as he would have liked, but not exactly behind either. Drawing on a basketball analogy, he said, quote, "I don't know if we're at halftime yet." Sparrowgrove reminded the board that anyone, parents and students, is welcome to attend the instructional committee meetings. For links to the school district's planning documents and timeline for adopting Common Core math standards, you can visit our website at kcaw.org. Common Core math standards were also on the agenda in a joint meeting between the school board and the student government of Sitka High School, but it was trumped by other issues raised by the high school students. The hour-long work session took place prior to Tuesday night's regular meeting of the school board. In an interview with KCAW following the discussion, Owen Fulton said that students were not especially concerned with the transition to Common Core. Rather, they wanted a more active role in policy decisions in all aspects of their educations. Fulton said he did not feel that the school's current math curriculum was substandard. He hadn't taken the SATs yet, but he did say he did okay on the math component of the PSAT. Other issues the students brought forward included holding a health summit in schools to mirror Sitka's community health summit, and the implementation of a hot breakfast program. An often raised objection to hot breakfast is that it would require altering morning bus schedules. Fulton told the board that some schools had solved this problem by serving hot breakfast after first period. And an issue that has long been a concern of parents is now on students' radar: fees for extracurricular activities. Students said that air travel to events was creating an economic divide in school. Anne Marie Pike spoke with KCAW after the meeting.
I was actually pretty nosy. I went to a bunch of different friends that I have, and even people I don't really know very well, and I asked, and I didn't encounter one sport where there wasn't somebody who said that it's more expensive this year and it's more difficult to pay, especially, and that affects people differently, but I think everybody hates having to pay more. and we just felt like it wasn't fair, and so I brought it up at student council, and I was surprised by how many people really identified with it but hadn't thought to brought it up. So we decided to bring it up with the school board, because even if it's not something they can affect, at least we wanted it to be something that they're aware of.
As an example, Pike said a recent trip to Ketchikan cost students on the drama, debate, and forensic team $260 each, not including meals. She said that until this year, that was what a student might expect to pay to go to a state event in Anchorage. Fundraising, she said, could bring the cost down to about $200 per student, but also she was worried about tipping the scales too far towards fundraising.
If we fundraise more than we actually practice for the activity, like with sports, if you're spending more time fundraising than you are in practice, that's not really the point of the activity, I think. So having it, the costs be so high, it is detrimental in a variety of ways to the activity itself and to school and to all sorts of other things.
Board members assured the students that they were aware of the problem. Jen Robinson noted that getting the state to increase funding for the ferry system and develop better scheduling was challenging, since Southeast legislatures were far outnumbered by counterparts in the rail belt. Superintendent Steve Bradshaw suggested that the students produce a short documentary video about the problem, which board members could distribute during their upcoming lobbying trip to Juneau. In other business Tuesday night, the Sitka School Board put its weight behind an effort to increase funding for locally sourced food in schools across the state. In a resolution to the legislature, the board cited the success of Sitka's Fish to Schools program as justification for extending a similar statewide program beyond 1 year. Nutritional Alaska Food for Schools was introduced by Anchorage Republican Bill Stoltz in 2012 and piloted last year. This year, the governor has included funding of $3 million for the program, but only for 1 year. All schools in Alaska will receive funding from the program based on student population. Sitka's Fish to Schools program was conceived during the Sitka Health Summit in the fall of 2010 and launched the following spring. School Board President Lon Garrison considers it to be one of the pioneering efforts in the state.
And I have to say, I think, you know, Sitka is one of the communities that's really leading the way with our Fish to Schools program, and a lot of communities are looking at that.
The Sitka District and Mount Edgecombe High School each received about $39,000 in the pilot program. The emphasis in Sitka has been on seafood, although Mount Edgecombe used some of its funding to purchase potatoes from Gustavus. Tracy Gagneau manages Fish to School for the Sitka Conservation Society. She was pleased to hear of the board's support and says the bill is an economic driver for both agriculture and seafood in the state. It's ecologically sensible and healthy. She says, quote, it's a win-win-win. The school board's vote was unanimous. The resolution encourages the legislature to develop multi-year funding for nutritional Alaska food for schools. And the final design for the Alaska-class ferry is expected to be complete by the end of this month, clearing the way for the state to award a construction contract to a shipyard this summer. Department of Transportation Deputy Commissioner Ruben Yost says the state has preliminary estimates from Vigor Alaska, formerly Alaska Ship and Dry Dock of Ketchikan, and Elliott Bay Design Group of Seattle. If the shipyard and architect are close on the final estimate, Yost says the ferries will be built in Ketchikan.
When we have the contract design complete, we will get estimates from both entities. That's in early March, and then based on that, we will either be negotiating a maximum price with the shipyard or we will be advertising.
In late 2012, when Governor Sean Parnell announced the scaled-down Alaska-class ferry design, he said his goal was to have, quote, Alaskans build Alaska ferries in Alaska. In a House Transportation Committee meeting Tuesday, Sitka Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins asked Yost what factors the department will weigh when deciding whether to award the contract to Vigor Alaska or to go outside.
I think everybody's got a vested interest in seeing the vessel built in Alaska. Presumably, we would still build the vessel in Alaska even if the maximum price is a little bit higher than competitor shipyards in the lower 48 just because we're keeping dollars in state. But do you have any sense of how big that discrepancy has to get before you would look at awarding the contract to an out-of-state shipyard?
Yost said the most important thing is for the project to stay within its $117 million budget.
If we faced a situation where we had very strong evidence that the vessel could be built within the existing budget, out of state through a competitive bid process, but not at the Ketchikan shipyard, then we would have to seriously consider whether we would continue with this process.
According to Yost, Vigor Alaska and Elliott Bay Design Group are bound by confidentiality agreements that prevent them from sharing cost estimates with each other. He said the state hopes to award a contract by June, with the first ferry completed by mid-2016 and the second vessel by mid-2017. The 280-foot Alaska-class ferries will be used primarily in Lynn Canal and on shorter Alaska Marine Highway System routes in southeast Alaska. The vessels will be able to carry up to 300 passengers and 53 vehicles. Initially, the Parnell administration wanted open car decks on the boats, but the design was changed after input from the public and ferry designers. That's all for Raven News for this hour. You can listen to or read Raven News stories again on our website. That's at kcaw.org. It's 8 a.m., currently 21 degrees under fair skies in downtown Sitka. Coming up at 8:18, interview with Eric Marienthal, jazz saxophonist here for the Sitka Jazz Festival. Hope you can stick around for that, and hope you can stick around all day with your community-sponsored, listener-supported public radio station. This is Morning Edition on Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. Time is 8:01. Thanks for joining me.